This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NFL regular season begins tonight, folks. You still got a few hours. Get ready for the season. Who are we kidding? Man, we still got a couple of days until Sunday when all of the teams play. So make sure you're ready to go. VSiN Pro subscription gets your updated NFL betting guide, preseason predictions. We've been spending all preseason getting ready with these teams. Updated numbers and odds as well. Make sure you check out everything we have to offer. And there's some good articles in there, too, like contest betting strategies and more. Subscribe for as low as $19 if you're not a pro subscriber now. Check it out now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Swedelson are in their usual spots. Spots being here at the D Las Vegas, where later tonight bread will be broken. Actually, I don't know. We don't know if we specifically will get bread, but
I pretty much eat at all restaurants that have bread.
I'm a big guy. I like bread. Of the accoutrement that you can get before a meal, I'm there with bread, but I think chips and salsa are the best one.
I mean, we did my top 10 appetizers list, and free bread was number one on the list.
Really?
Yeah, chips and salsa was on it, but I think there is a variance, to use a betting term, with chips and salsa, where some places like to just open up a jar and throw some bagged chips down, and like that doesn't do it for me.
I will say this. So you want to know one of the best meals I ever had? It was, I'll give them a pop, Mesa Grill. It's like a Bobby Flay spot.
Yeah.
But you want to know why it was awesome? Because there was a guy who actually, I'm like 95% sure, is in the sports betting community now, who, when I was dating Isabel, at the time we were just boyfriend girlfriend, was really trying to get at her. So he gave her a $150 gift card to Mesa Grill, and guess who she took? Me. So it was one of the best meals I've ever had.
That's a flex right there.
It was one of the best meals I've ever had.
Not only was it free, but another man who wanted the girl you were with paid for it.
That's right.
By the way, the problem is, though, at Mesa Grill, I don't think it covered the total bill.
No,
but still, I mean, you get $150 off the hill.
No, I agree.
I bring that up too because they had this really good like corn like muffin with like a I don't know what it was. It was incredible.
Well, if it's Bobby Flay's, he put chilies in it because he puts chilies in everything,
and it was spicy.
Real quick before we get back to football, where are we going tonight?
It's a good question. Maybe you can tweet at us suggestions, and if you want to pick up the tab because you want to hit on one of us, we'll let you do it.
That's right.
I'm just curious what your guys' options are. The only requirement I said is they have to have the game on
somewhere. Yeah, it looks like JVT and I are very picky eaters. We should definitely wonder what our options are.
I can tell you this. I guarantee you're a pickier, more picky eater than I am.
Really? Because if it's on a plate, it goes down my gullet.
That's fair.
It is. We'll decide. Maybe we don't want to let the unwashed masses. No, of course not. We would love for you to come out and say what's up. All right, so let's get back to this. Lions and Chiefs. I wanted to continue to build on the thought of home field and what we're talking about with playing on the road. So let's hear from Dan Campbell one more time because he talked about the challenges specifically of playing at Arrowhead, but there are also the challenges of what I mentioned to you before we went to break them all, which is opening on the road, especially you know in the beginning of the season and when a team is, of course, playing for the first time after winning the Super Bowl. Here's what he had to say.
It's the offensively the communication piece, right? Knowing that you're not going to be able to go verbal. And so that's really the difference is knowing, all right, well, right out of the gate offensively, we have to be ready to communicate. And really, it's no different than if you're at home, our defense has to be ready to communicate non-verbally, right? Because your own crowd, our own, you know, Ford Field, which we'll worry about Seattle, that's where our defense now has to. So there's always a give and take, if you will. But to me, that's the most important piece of this is the offensive communication. I feel like we've been really good now. 3 days in, we got the speakers going out there. We're blasting. We got two sides of it, you know, and we've got them driving the carts down. So we make sure that it's nonstop chaotic and you can't hear yourself think. Because if they can handle that now, they'll be ready Thursday night.
This is look. Travel's easier than it ever has been for these guys, right? It's also why you're going to hear at some point this season West Coast team making the trip out east and playing against them from an ATS standpoint. Since 2018, it's actually near 60% teams that have gone out east from west because the market is way over accounted for it. And the other part of that quota mall, these guys are – they have seen everything to this point, right? So you are doing everything possible to get ready for whatever scenario you're in. And talking about the playing – there are slight advantages, but it goes back to what the fascinating conversation is, which is playing at home is worth something, but it's just not worth that much anymore because these guys are always ready to go no matter what team it is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I'll tell you what, though. I think it's difficult to really simulate the noise that you're going to hear in Arrowhead. I mean, it just does not leave the stadium. It's going to be tough, but this team should be ready to go. They've got a great opportunity here. I think if they were to win this game, JVT, you're going to take notice all around the league. But I still feel like Kansas City is going to win the game. And if you like the Lions to win the division, your better bet is to wait until Detroit loses today and Minnesota wins on Sunday. Gives you a good price on winning the division as to laying a shorter number right now.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I'm not somebody who believes in Detroit, but that is a good way to look at it, especially if they're underdogs here in this game. Now, the line is shortening up, but I wouldn't really buy into it. Dustin, I know you're busy. You said you're going to play first half. Are you thinking about playing first half here?
Currently doing the computations as we speak. I'm looking back
you're
at the history
numbers.
Of the Chiefs in the first quarter and the first half, and what I'm noticing right now so far is they're about 50-50 in the first quarter. And they mostly figure out in the half as a full. It looks like so far, I haven't looked at last year yet, but 21, dating back to when Mahomes took over to 18, 21 versus Cleveland was the only time that I have found they lost both the first quarter and the first half.
Okay.
Which is very odd that it was Cleveland and Baker Mayfield. And
yeah.
So I'm going to see how they did last year. I'll get you the number. I will at some point come up before the show is over with a first half bet and maybe a couple more props here on the Chiefs to throw out there because – it is the opener. Like, yeah. Why are we not going to have some funsies?
Right, exactly. I mean, I bet Kansas City minus 4.5. You recommended team total, anything under 30, right? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Those no, you're, cor-
yeah?
you're correct.
Okay. Anything else that you were looking at for the game?
Not yet, but, you know, a couple of props. You mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm kind of curious to see what his yardage total is, in particular in terms of reception yardage, because I think it's going to be a great factor in this game for Detroit's offense. They're going to move the ball. Without Jones, it's going to have an impact on this team. I think Dustin has the number here. It may not. I apologize if you don't.
Getting a soundbite ready because Dan Campbell actually talked about Jahmyr Gibbs. Because, you know, Ben Johnson a few days ago came out and said, we're going to use him in revolutionary ways, which is like it's still football and he's still a running back. So it's like, how are you going to use him? This was what Dan Campbell had to say about Jahmyr Gibbs, his rookie running back out of Alabama, and how they plan on utilizing him tonight.
We'd like to believe he's a pretty versatile player. There's things he can do certainly in the run game, but also in the pass game. So I can't tell you what all that would be right now. I'd rather not do that, but I don't know if he'll line up at punter, if that helps. But he does, you know, he does have versatility, and but this is also his first game out. And so we want to be smart with how we use him. We certainly don't want to overdo it, but we want to have enough in to where we know he can help us win here. So, but he's in a good place. He's had a good week of practice.
Rush yards for Jahmyr Gibbs, 38.5 over at DraftKings, shaded to the under at minus 120. Receiving yards, 31.5, shaded to the over at minus 130.
31.5?
31 for receiving yards.
Yeah, I like the receiving yardage more than I do the rushing yardage total here with Gibbs. I don't know how much you watched him play at Georgia Tech and Alabama. This kid can fly. He is an absolute matchup nightmare. You know, as good as Bijan Robinson is, Bijan's a much better runner between the tackles, but Gibbs is every bit the receiver Robinson is in terms of once you get into open space. So I don't think that's a bad play there at all. Amon-Ra St. Brown could be an intriguing prop tonight in terms of yardage. He's gotten off to a great start in his career. I think he's a guy that flew a little bit under the radar simply because he was drafted later than expected coming out of USC. I like this offense, but again, I have question marks for both teams defensively. We talked about Jones not being in the lineup. I think this could be a game where Detroit is able to get some points as well. I just think Mahomes and company, though, are going to be able to flourish regardless of whether Kelsey's in the lineup. And I don't know where you come out, JVT. I know Dustin's kind of on the same page with me on this one. I firmly believe Travis Kelsey's not playing. Any bets made are predicated upon the fact that he's not going to be in the lineup. And I think it's the prudent move for the Kansas City Chiefs. You get 3 additional days. This is game 1 of 17. You've got enough time in case you lose this football game to make up for it. And you've got an important game against Jacksonville next week.
Also, so Amal, I think that's the correct mindset, right? When you go into handicap a game,
yeah. You
can't handicap for all the ifs, ands, and maybes, right?
Yeah.
You go in, and this, I think, speaks to you and maybe your strategy. Would you say you're going to bet thinking Kelsey's out of the game because now you have a plan of attack in-game if for some reason he does play to kind of get back in it?
Oh, absolutely. But in my instance, I want to still take Kansas City's team total over 29.5. So for me, it's not going to make a difference. Kelsey playing is just a bonus, right?
Like, yeah,
it's,
sure.
You're not expecting him to go, and then all of a sudden he's in the lineup and what he brings to the table. Also, if he does play, is there a concern that he's not as effective as he normally is because of a health situation with a potential hyperextended knee?
Yeah, and I think it opens stuff up for a lot of props. I think all of a sudden, I already bet. I put it in VSiN.com/picks. Sky Moore over on his receiving yards. I'm looking at some touchdown scores. I think Kadarius Toney has a chance to find the end zone because when he's on the field, that guy does do that. I wouldn't go over his yard total, I don't think, if Kelsey is somehow out. But I do think he has a chance to get to the end zone because he's a big play guy.
Are you guys moonlighting as Sky Moore's agents?
What?
I just think the numbers, right? I think there's continuity there. He's one of the few guys that's coming back that he trusts in the air game. I think he's going to take a jump from year one to year two.
I mean, I haven't really actually spoken anything positive about him this year. I just keep going back to the fact that I bet him for offense rookie of the year last year, and it did absolutely.
And the last time I saw him, he was scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
That's right.
He had 250 yards last year.
It's good. It's more than I had, that's for sure. By the way, we're talking about this a lot. The website is filled with a ton of stuff, too. Check out vsin.com, including Stephanie Kamyshak's first touchdown tracker and some week one picks in that regard. Well, I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We'll take our break here. We're not done with football by any stretch. Don't go anywhere. Sharp Money here on vsin, the Sports Betting Network.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Check out everything we have on the website that includes the betting splits data. You can check out money and bets for every single game. And the best part is they're updated every 10 minutes, so the information is up to date. It's not just for today's games, but future events as well. One of the many ways VSIN is here to help. Check it out now, VSIN.com. And if you're not a subscriber, get access to it by checking out your subscription options at VSIN.com/subscribe. It is Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. JVT is filling in for Patrick Maher. I don't know why I referred to myself in the third person. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Malshaw and Dustin Swielsen are here. Ben Raven is nice enough to give us some time here today. You can find the work mlive.com, Detroit Lions beat writer. Why are you laughing?
Because the way you go third person on that one.
I didn't mean to. You know, sometimes the arrogance is there. All right, Ben, let's start with this. We had, a little bit of a scare, at least here nationally. You're much more tied into it. Frank Ragnow misses practice the other day. It doesn't seem serious. Can you update us on that? He is going to be good to go?
Yeah, you know, this is business as usual for Frank Ragnow. You know, this kind of started last year, actually about 2 years ago when he had the initial surgery. You know, they've always made it sound it's going to be a cautious approach with him to get him through the season because he really is just one of the, like, cornerstone pieces of this team and not just that offensive line. But he's going to be good to go. It was just a veteran maintenance day, and he's going to have about 17 to 25 of those this year, so business as usual.
Ben, we were talking about Jahmyr Gibbs a little bit earlier because we heard a soundbite from Dan Campbell referencing him. Tell me a little bit of what you expect him to do tonight or how he could potentially be utilized.
Oh, he's going to be utilized all over that field because without Jameson Williams out there for the first 6 weeks, he is this team's electric home run threat. He's going to share the field with David Montgomery at times. He's going to line up out wide. He's going to motion into the slot. He's going to do just about everything that you can do with a running back / wide receiver like him. I mean, I really think just that's going to be someone that's just going to have a massive role right from the get. And I think Montgomery's going to have a massive role too. I mean, they're going to change from what they did last year. Swift and Williams didn't share the field too much. They're going to utilize Montgomery and Gibbs at the same time just because they really trust what they can give that offense. So I'm thinking a lot of involvement for the rookie to get his career started tonight.
So one of the strengths that we can kind of build on this, because obviously it is this Lions offense, but specifically along the offensive line, when you're facing a front that doesn't have Chris Jones, it's already an advantage. What do you predict in terms of this matchup, Lions offensive line versus a front without its best defensive player?
Yeah, I think Ben Johnson and Jared Goff are probably licking their lips at how much trust and comfort they're going to have in their play action looks tonight. I mean, they're going to try and pound that ball. They're going to try and pound that rock with Monty up the gut. I mean, seriously, I mean, this is that's a big, big, big loss for this game for the Chiefs, not having Chris Jones out there because, I mean, you get Jared Goff comfortable in the play action. Chris Jones is there to disrupt things. Going to stay on script. I mean, they're going to really look to pound that rock and play action football because there's going to be a whole lot of comfort in keeping Jared Goff on his feet and inside the pocket where they want him.
Ben, what's the single biggest improvement you see from this team from last year, whether it be offensive side or defensive side of the ball, and people can expect tonight?
Depth, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, not having Emmanuel Mosley tonight, that hurts for sure. But, I mean, Brian Branch was so good through camp, so good through the preseason, that he actually pushed Tracy Walker, a team-voted captain. I think he's led the team in tackles 3 out of the last 5 years, to the bench. Branch is going to start at the slot. That's a lot of depth. Gardner Johnson can move inside. You can get Tracy Walker in the safety look. So there's a lot of versatility in that defensive backfield. But honestly, it's the room of edge rushers. Josh Pascal, last year's second-round pick, he's healthy again. He's looking like a stud. They got John Kaminsky back, Aiden Hutchinson at the top of that group. And then you get two veterans who just kind of got forgotten about last year, Charles Harris and Romeo Okwara. I mean, Harris has looked like the no-doubt starter on the other side of Hutchinson on that defensive line. And we haven't even mentioned James Houston, who had like 7.5 sacks in 8 weeks last year. I mean, there is just depth and depth and depth, because I think you're going to see Kaminsky, Pascal, and Hutchinson kick inside just to get all those edge rushers on the field at times to try and, you know, disrupt Mahomes as much as possible.
So building on that defensively, when you look at this, how realistic, or what's the realistic leap we can expect from this defense from where they were last year?
Well, last year they were 31 or 32, and I honestly, I've been asked this question a lot the last week, and I honestly think they can get into the top 15. You know, I don't think this is going to be a top 10 defense. I don't think this is going to be one of the elite defenses week in and week out, but I do think that they can go from that 32, that 31 range to the top half of the league. And that's a big first step for as much youth and as much new pieces they have on that defense. But it really feels like they've given Aaron Glenn all the pieces that he's ever wanted to do, to play his scheme the exact way he wants to play it, to keep offensive coordinators on their toes as much as possible by interchanging pieces. But, yeah, I really think this group can jump into that barely top half of the league mark, but that's a pretty big-time improvement from where they were last year.
When you look at this team in this division, I would assume yourself, along with a lot of other people in the state of Michigan, are confident that this team's going to be able to win the division. Is that where you come out when you look at what the pieces that have been assembled for the Lions this year?
Yeah, that was one of the exercises we did this week, and I got the Lions winning 11 games in the division. You know, I think the one sneaky team, it's weird to call the Packers sneaky, but I think people in Michigan, I think people around the NFC North are sleeping on the Packers and their potential just game-breaking defense this year. So I really do think the Packers are the threat, but I do. The Lions are no doubt favorites in my mind. You know, win or lose tonight, that's the best all-around team in the NFC North. I do think that it's a division crown or disappointment.
Ben Raven with us. So you can follow him on Twitter, Benjamin S. Raven, also MLive.com, where you can find the news, Detroit Lions beat writer. Okay, so Ben, if you look at it from that perspective, have you talked to them about that? Have they given voice to the fact that they are the favorites? Like, in the betting community, they are the favorites to win that division. That is a different role for a team that has, you know, had the past that the Detroit Lions have had.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, the head coach and GM, they both have said, yeah, we expect to win this division. We've got the pieces. You know, the players are there's a lot of outside talk about, oh, what happens with this team? Do they stay hungry? Is the hype train getting too out of control? And I say no. And, I mean, I haven't seen any red flags in that department because, I mean, they realize it. This team has not made the playoffs. They don't have anything to celebrate, you know. So they're hungry. They think they have the pieces, the head coach and the GM. Calvin Johnson even coming out of the woodwork to say this team's winning the division this year, and they expect to win that division. So the internal expectations are high, but you know, they're not getting too far ahead of themselves, because staying hungry is like number one goal of this young team.
Well, Counselor, you've made compelling arguments for why the Lions are going to win this division, but I've got a little bit of pushback, and I want you to address this one. They started the season last year 1-6, finished 8-2. Did the fact that they got off to such a slow start and then all of a sudden are in a situation where they have nothing to lose help catapult them that stretch, the finish down the stretch?
Oh, absolutely. I think there was just, you know, when the pressure's off and you're down and out and nobody's paying attention to you and you're 1-6 and out of the race, yeah, the pressure comes off. But I do think a lot of that improvement came with the youth growing up, and the youth growing up in a hurry. And Jared Goff, Jared Goff gets a lot of credit for last season, but Ben Johnson really just built this offense around Goff's strengths, his comforts. He's given Goff a voice at the table, so he has a say on the offense. I think that just has an enormous piece of the puzzle to it. But honestly, it was just the youth getting better. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, James Houston, Kirby Joseph. I mean, they were starting a lot of rookies by the end of the season. So it's just like they're still like a year and a half ahead of schedule than where we thought they were when they hired Campbell and Holmes in 2021. So it's kind of – I really give a lot of credit to that offensive line, Ben Johnson stabilizing, and Jared Goff being the most comfortable he's ever looked outside of that Super Bowl run, to be honest with you. But, yeah, a lot of defensive youth jumps forward propelled that.
Has Detroit come to terms with the thought that this is Ben Johnson's last year as their offensive coordinator? Because if everything goes as planned, he's probably getting a job, right?
It's kind of hard to expect that guy not having a job. Like, even if the Lions disappoint and win 8 or 9 games, that offense remains a top 10 unit. If Jared Goff continues to live his career, I think everybody's come to grips with if not this year, then next, because I mean, I think he's 36, 37 years old, and that guy's getting a job, and they know they're pretty lucky to even have him back this year. So that's fueling a lot of optimism, no doubt, around here. But yeah, I think everybody's real with that one. But you know, there's a lot of internal pieces that have been for the ride, because the most interesting thing about Ben Johnson is that he actually started in Detroit with the Matt Patricia regime. So yep. Just kind of an interesting couple of layers there for sure, kind of worked his way up through the ranks. But, yeah, I think everybody kind of accepts that guy to be at the top of every team's wish list looking for a new coach next January or February.
MLive.com, where you can find his work. His name's Ben Raven. All right, Ben, we'll get you out of here in this last 45 seconds. What happens tonight?
You know, I think the Chiefs come out hot. I think the Chiefs come out hot and get a lead, but I think it's going to be a competitive, kind of high-scoring game. I really do. I think the Lions lose by 10, 14 points. I really don't think they have enough firepower to keep up with this team. And, you know, even without – if Travis Kelce doesn't play, it's 50-50 at this point. Reports going in both directions. But I think the Chiefs win by 10 to 14 points in a competitive yet convincing victory.
Ben, we appreciate some time, man. Thank you very much. Enjoy the game tonight. And we have a picture of you because we're on television. Great beard, man. Great beard.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Put a lot of work into that.
MLive.com. Thanks, man. Ben Raven, you get Detroit Lions beat writer. All right, we'll take our break. We are not done. Whole hours on Thursday Night Football. Mick Schaefer's going to join us. Dustin has me to thank for this. We'll talk the Kansas City Chiefs angle when we return here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
NFL is here, folks, and you still have time to get a betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide has plenty of opportunities all season long. You get picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and football contest strategies and more. If you want the best, most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, previews, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price on an annual subscription. Bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. We welcome back here on Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Let's welcome in our next guest. Sean McDonough is nice enough to be with us, ESPN college football announcer. Sean, thank you. We appreciate it. Let's start with this. Do you like pimento cheese?
Sure, who doesn't? I kind of like any kind of cheese, really. Probably why my cholesterol is a million, but I would think I do. Yes, I would say yes.
Did you try the new Chick-fil-A sandwich? Dustin was singing its praises. They have a honey pimento, cheese sandwich or something like that? Are you in on that?
I have not tried that yet, but it sounds like something I'd be willing to try the next time I'm in the neighborhood of one of those establishments.
Sean McDonough with us. All right, let's talk a little bit about football. I want to talk about the team that you watched last week in North Carolina. One of the things that came out of that game, a lot of people noted physicality for UNC, that it looked a little bit different defensively. Did you come away with that same observation?
Oh, for sure. You know, they had the 9 sacks. They had 17 all of last year. You know, they told us in the meetings the night before, Gene Chizik, the defensive coordinator, you could kind of tell he felt like he didn't do a very good job last season and that they were just too static, you know, in their structure and the way they played. They were going to be much more aggressive. You know, we talked to Cedric Gray, their terrific linebacker, the night before. He was excited about the fact that they were going to be much more aggressive. And, you know, they brought a lot of pressures. I think they were certainly helped by the fact that the South Carolina offensive line was not good. You know, I fear for Spencer Rattler's health and ability to survive the season if they continue to play like that. So, you know, they had a tough situation. They lost their starting right tackle in one of the first plays of the game on offense. But if they don't shore that up, they're going to have a long year. But, no, I was very impressed by North Carolina. You know, unfortunately, they got some really bad news today, I guess. I just read it. that Tez Walker, the wide receiver, has been ruled ineligible for the year. Yeah, I think with him, they had a chance to compete for the ACC title. Perhaps they still do, but it'll be a little bit harder without him.
Mr. McDonough, great to have you back on with us. We had you during the NHL playoffs. And
thanks, Amal. Good to be with you and Jonathan.
Thank you. I tell you what, we see Sam Howell transfer and the impact that he's had for Notre Dame. As we continue to go forward and the transfer portal being now just basically free agency, could teams and programs, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, look to poach somebody as good as this without necessarily recruiting and developing their own guys? Because to me, if you put Sam Hartman on one of these teams, they're the favorite to win the national title.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable pickup for Notre Dame. You know, you wouldn't think of Notre Dame as the kind of school that would spend money in NIL or that sort of thing to get somebody, whereas obviously other schools are spending lots of money to go do that. But yeah, that's, I think, going to be a situation. We're seeing it here, right, in their opponent on Saturday, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Brennan Armstrong is going to be the starting quarterback for NC State. He had 1 year left. You know, he came from Virginia, where 2 years ago he had a tremendous season. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and UVA had one of the best offenses. Then they had a coaching change, and, you know, it just wasn't a good fit for him, or the team, obviously. And then they dealt with that horrific tragedy at the end of the year. So, yeah, I think we're just going to see more and more of that at quarterback. And, you know, for all of Drake May's connections, you know, we talked about North Carolina, his connections to North Carolina. You know, his dad played there. His brother was a basketball star. You know, there were some concerns at North Carolina that he might leave after last year and go someplace else. So, and if he wanted to do that, he would have obviously gotten a lot of money to go do it. So, yeah, I think you're onto something that's probably going to happen over and over again. Now, you can't really plan that way, because if you plan, well, we won't develop anybody, we'll just go poach a great quarterback from somebody else, and you don't get them, then you're stuck. So you better have a fallback plan.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy with May. When you get a quarterback announcing on Twitter last year, I'm coming back, but not because he wasn't going to go to the NFL, but because he just wasn't going to transfer, which is where we're at this point right now. All right, so let's talk about NC State. Outside of Brennan Armstrong, when you're getting ready for this game and you're evaluating NC State, what position group sticks out to you?
Well, they're really good on defense. You know, they have an excellent corner in Aiden White. The linebacker, Peyton Wilson, has been a really productive player for them for years. You know, they lost some starters from last year. I mean, they went 8-5 last year, as you guys know, with an offense that was pretty dreadful and a defense that was number one in the ACC in scoring and, you know, in the top 20 nationally in a lot of the key defensive categories. They just were so bad on offense that they had an 8-win season when, based on how good their defense and special teams were, they probably should have been better than that. But, you know, I worry a little bit after watching their opener against UConn. I know it's the opening game, and I think UConn's pretty good. I mean, as we know, they went to a bowl game last year, and Jim Moore did a terrific job and is doing a terrific job there, and he's an outstanding defensive coach, obviously. But the North Carolina State offense did not look good in that game. They scored 24 points. Their last touchdown drive was helped by 30 yards of penalties by UConn, so they really took advantage of the shorter field. And they didn't have a 20-yard play the whole night. You know, I think their longest pass was 18 yards and the longest run was 19 or vice versa, but they didn't have a 20-yard play. So, you know, if they don't get in the business of getting some explosive plays, you know, I think they're going to continue to struggle on offense, even with Armstrong reunited with the offensive coordinator, Robert Anai.
Mr. McDonough, break down how you see Clemson. That was a horrific loss for a program that has been dominant the last decade. Now to go to Duke and lose the opener. How does that shake things up for Dabo Swinney and company?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people now saying, you know, their era is over. I saw one quote, the Dabo dynasty is over. People are saying that's what you get for not getting in the transfer portal. Everybody else is, you need to, too. Perhaps there's some truth to that. I was actually at that game as a fan. You know, we had the game in Charlotte last Saturday, and we're here in Raleigh on Saturday. So I just stayed and went to the game. And you guys probably watched it, too. I mean, it wasn't a fluke. Duke was the better team, but they didn't fumble twice in the first half. You know, in key situations, they might have won the game, probably would have won the game more comfortably than they did. You know, if you didn't know, you know, what the lineage was, what the legacy was, the traditions of these two schools, you would have thought Duke was Clemson and the other way around. So, you know, I think there is reason for concern at Clemson. They certainly don't have the playmakers at wide receiver that they used to have. I would have questions about Klubnik at quarterback. And, you know, Duke's for real. I mean, their quarterback's legit. They have a lot of good athletes, a lot of good football players on both sides of the ball. Mike Elko's obviously a heck of a coach. And, yeah, I think they're going to have another terrific season after winning 9 last year.
Sean McDonough with us, college football play-by-play voice for ESPN. Sean, really quick, I want to build on something that you just mentioned. Do you think maybe there is something to that point, though, about Clemson maybe needing to get a little bit more active or evolve here? Because I know Dabo hasn't wanted to do the whole transfer portal thing. But, like, when you see a guy like Keon Coleman, for example, who played at Michigan State, and you have a wide receiver room that wasn't really very good, you could have been in on a guy like that. Isn't there something to at least having or asking Dabo at some point to evolve in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. Although, you know, one of the things that I've always appreciated about Clemson, and we've done a zillion Clemson games here in the last many years, you know, they really have built a lot of their success on culture. You know, I remember him telling us stories. They'll have top recruits coming in for recruiting weekend. And if the players, the current players who are there hosting the recruits say, you know what, this guy might be a terrific player, but he's kind of a jerk and we don't think he'd fit in here, they stop recruiting him. So culture is really important. That being said, doesn't mean you can't do your research about a guy who you might take in the transfer portal and make sure he's going to be a good fit as a citizen, a student, whatever it is that you're looking for. So, you know, I just think, you know, it's an advantage that everybody has if they're willing to do it. In a place like Clemson with all their money, you know, they'd probably be pretty good in the transfer portal if they wanted to be. So I think he's going to have to rethink that. You know, it's kind of like what Coach K did late in his career when he didn't really want to get involved in the one and dones, but he did. And, you know, Duke went back to being a national power. Not that they ever really disappeared from that, but they certainly became what Duke had been before, again, in basketball. So, yeah, I think he's probably going to have to do that. Or if not, you know, he's going to watch a lot of talent go elsewhere that might have come to him.
Mr. McDonough, one final request, that you and Dave Pasch do not stop getting on these referees who are making dinner reservations on reviews. I mean, it is unbelievable. I always love when you jump down these guys' throats like, come on, what are we doing? And we've all made the call 10 minutes ago. We know what the decision is, and they take a month and a half.
Yeah, it's frustrating sometimes, and I should probably be calmer about it than I am. You know, these officials, by and large, do a good job, and they're human beings like the rest of us. And we all make mistakes, and I certainly made. I was just watching the tape of our game last week and counting some of mine. So, but it does all take longer, a lot longer sometimes than it should. And sometimes it's not just the call, right? They're going back to figure out where the ball should be, or did the clock stop or not stop, and what should the time be. So sometimes what seems obvious to us is obvious, but there are other things that go into the administration of the play that they're trying to figure out.
It goes back to my other idea. I have a plus-size men's clothing brand idea, and I also say play clock on the reviews. If you can't get it done by 60 seconds, get out. The play stands. Sean McDonough.
Well, it's supposed to be right, clear and obvious, right? Yep. So when it lasts 3 or 4 minutes, it's not clear and obvious. So to me, that's the whole bad thing about replay. You know, it was supposed to correct the obvious errors. You know, the old everybody in the bar yelling at the TV. He was out of bounds. You know,
Sean, we got to run. We're up against the hard out. Sorry to cut you off, but we appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings is rolling out Happy Hour Bet Boosts each day this week. Today's Happy Hour Superstar Super Boost, hot off the presses, is Amon-Ra St. Brown 15 or more first quarter receiving yards boosted from minus 150 to plus 150. How about that? Head to DraftKings now to take advantage of today's Happy Hour Boost, available until 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It is Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Let's welcome in our next guest, Mike Tannenbaum. Is nice enough to give us some time. Current ESPN insider, former New York Jets general manager. Also, make sure to check out the 33rd team as well. Awesome website. Mike, we appreciate some time. I want to go to social media. How do you feel about jinxing Jared Goff after tweeting out that his 324 consecutive passes without an interception is the fifth longest streak in NFL history?
Yeah, it's definitely a mortal lock that he'll throw one tonight, right? Maybe in the first series.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be on a tip pass, but yeah, without question. Hey, look, I think it says a lot about how much, you know, his career has been resurrected, guys. You know, like, people feel like, hey, that was a throwaway in the Matt Stafford trade, and, you know, they were trying to get out from under guaranteed money. But, you know, Jared Goff has played really good football over the last
nine games of the season last year, guys, the Detroit Lions were 7-2, and they scored the third most amount of points.
Yeah, this team has been very impressive. Mike, when you look at them from an offensive standpoint, Goff, as you alluded to, was kind of a guy that was just kind of a throwaway in this transition to Detroit. What do you think has helped him? Is it just coaching, players like Amon-Ra St. Brown emerging, combination of everything? What has it been for him?
You know, I think it's a little bit of everything, guys. I think it's scheme. I think it's coaching. I'm a big fan of Ben Johnson. He was someone I had the privilege of working with in Miami. I think it's a really, really good offensive line. And you show me a successful offense, I'll show you a successful offensive line. And I think it starts up front.
So you mentioned in this stat too, right, Chris Jones, without him there, hard to see the streak for Goff ending tonight. So what do you think the impact of Jones' absence is against an offensive line like this for Detroit?
Yeah, I think it's a massive loss for Kansas City. I'm just, you know, hard-pressed to understand why, you know, he's not in camp, and it's not good for him. It's not good for the sport, and I think it gives a massive, massive advantage to Detroit, not only running it, but throwing it as well.
Mike, when you say you don't understand why he's not in camp, do you not understand it from his perspective or the perspective of the team not paying him?
Well, I got to think as soon as Quinn Williams was signed, like, go ahead and get the deal done. You know, he should be above Quinn Williams, below Aaron Donald. And to me, you know, of all the tough deals to get done, this one's pretty easy.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. I think it's a great point. Once Williams was signed, you would expect that to happen. Mike, want to go to some other games in the National Football League, starting with the game in Cleveland this weekend. The Bengals here, a slight favorite on the road. This Browns team has seemed to have Cincinnati's number. From your assessment of Deshaun Watson throughout his career, despite the absence last couple of years, how effective can he be with the pieces around him with a very good offensive line?
Yeah, this is the team that to me has maybe the biggest variance of anybody. You know, on paper they got a lot better, but Deshaun Watson hasn't been the same player. Now, you know, a lot of excuses last year for obvious reasons, the long suspension, but I think there's as much pressure on him and Russell Wilson as any quarterback, and I think it's really important for them to get off a good start. They're going against a really young secondary of Cincinnati, and there should be opportunities for the Browns.
You mentioned Russell Wilson. Can his career get resurrected with Sean Payton, or has he kind of fallen off the cliff and Seattle saw it well before everyone else?
I think it's the latter. He looked like a skilled, diminished athlete to me a year ago. He lost his quickness, and when you're also short, you need to be quick. And I don't know if it's over, but you know, Sean Payton's going to have to get the most out of him. And look, at one point, Russell Wilson was a talented guy, but he just doesn't seem like he's the same athlete right now.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, ESPN NFL insider, and of course, former Jets general manager. So, in the betting community, Mike, one of the popular teams to make a leap this season would be the Chicago Bears. It seems there's a lot of sentiment behind Chicago, you know, making a push in the NFC North. They have better odds to win the NFC North of the Green Bay Packers. Do you understand some hype behind Chicago? What do you think a realistic step forward is for the Bears?
You know, maybe 7 or 8 wins. A little concerned about the offensive line. Tevin Jenkins already hurt. I think they're better. Love DJ Moore. But this is, to me, the proverbial they're a year away from being a year away.
So when it comes to Fields, and it's kind of like a chicken-egg thing, right? Does Fields get better as a passer because he has more, or is there something there where he's just not good advanced? Like, how does he get better as a passer? Does Moore push him along?
Yeah, and I just think better decisions, get rid of the ball quicker, run when it's time to run, throw when it's time to throw. You got, you know, Cole Kmet. To me, like, this is an offense that they got to stay on schedule more and use the run for explosive plays when they're there. But, again, Chase Claypool has to be a little bit more reliable. But to me, it starts with DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, and then someone else has to come along in the passing game, and hopefully they can take the next step.
Mike, before you came in, we were talking briefly about the AFC's, Buffalo and the Jets in particular. Kind of assess where you see both teams going into the season from your perspective.
You know, the Jets, to me, the story is the offensive line, guys. You know, Dwayne Brown's hit 38 years old, started 12 games. Mekhi Becton was the 11th pick in 2020, but he's only played in one game. So I think Buffalo is going to be the division winner. I'm a little old school that way where, you know, I think you're the champ until proven otherwise.
All right, let's go to something that I know that you're pretty high on here. What do you make of the changes in offense for the Los Angeles Chargers? Is this going to work for Justin Herbert?
Yeah, well, considering I came out and said he was going to win the MVP over Patrick Mahomes, it's better, right?
Yep.
look, I just think when you think about Kellen Moore, Rashawn Slater, and Quentin Johnston, that's a pretty good triumph for him to improve an already explosive offense. I mean, a team that should be explosive, and I think you're going to see the ball thrown down more. You know, there's a great stat, ADOT, average depth of target. I think the Chargers will be, you know, one of the better teams in that category. And I think that plays to Justin Herbert's ability to get the ball down the field. And, guys, I could just tell you from building teams, it's hard to find one corner with size and athleticism to cover a guy like Mike Williams. Now to get somebody to cover Quentin Johnston, who I know struggled in preseason. But I think the Chargers have really built a really good team.
With the average depth of target with field or with Herbert, and for people who don't know, he had like the one of, I think it was the bottom three in average depth of target among qualified quarterbacks last season. What is the balance of that being Herbert not willing to take shots and the offense skewing in that direction?
You know, like probably most things in life, guys, a little bit, you know, truth is somewhere in the middle. But like, again, I think they've tried to fix that. I think they have. And I'm really excited to see them play because I just think Herbert's so talented, so athletic. I think if you were building a quarterback, I'm hard-pressed to think that it wouldn't look like Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. The loss of Hargrave on the Philadelphia defensive front, how much of an impact does that have for that Eagles team? And do you believe they can not only repeat in the NFC East but in the NFC?
Yeah, I think they do, but I have the Patriots win this week in my upset of the week. Five new stars on defense for Philly, new coordinator in Sean Desai. You know, when you talk to coaches this week, guys, you hear a lot about the unscouted look. And Bill O'Brien's going to be new for the Patriots, and I think they'll have some surprises. And, you know, there's been some comparisons already made of Doug Peterson came in and the force multiplier he became for Trevor Lawrence. I think we're going to see a lot of that for Bill O'Brien and the Patriots this year.
So we were just talking about one of the wagers I've got, Mike, is the Patriots to make the playoffs. Are we forgetting about this team? Like, now that you have a real offensive coordinator in, this is one of the best defenses last year, and they got to 8 wins. I think that this team's a lot more competitive than we think.
I totally agree. Good defense at home. I think they get off to a good start. I think they're going to be in that conversation for the playoffs.
When you look at this Patriots team, what is the key and who has to emerge outside of Ramondre Stevenson for this offense?
Well, I mean, if you listen to Bill Belichick and you go by his actions, it's going to be Devontae Parker, somebody who we drafted in Miami. And they signed to an extension. You know, we all thought they'd be in on DeAndre Hopkins. And as he was signing with Tennessee, they were signing Devontae Parker to an extension. And I just think, you know, I'm a big believer, guys. And, you know, you got to go by what you see. And Coach Belichick, obviously, you know, feels really good about Devontae Parker. So I think he's going to be a key to their offense along with Mike Gesicki.
ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum. All right, so out of all the teams, when you talk to people that are receiving a lot of hype, a lot of, hey, this team's going to be very good, what is the team that you don't agree with the most, that you're like, I just don't really see where people are coming from?
Pittsburgh, you know, hate to go against Coach Tomlin, who's, you know, an all-time great Hall of Famer. I just think if the three of us were running, you know, an NFL team and we had to draft the quarterbacks currently in the AFC North, I think Kenny Pickett's fourth every time. So it's hard to go into the season knowing that you have the worst quarterback. And I think he got better, but I'm not taking him over any of the other three guys. And that's why I think it's just going to be hard for Pittsburgh.
Mike Tannenbaum again, ESPN Insider, former Jets general manager. Check out 33rd Team as well up on the internet. Mike, appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I like that. Well, I think there's a lot of polarizing opinions about what Pittsburgh is going to be. And I have to say, if I had an opinion changed, and not even so much changed, I've come around more on, it would be watching Kenny Pickett in the preseason and what the Pittsburgh Steelers could be. I have them on a teaser for week one against San Francisco. But there are a lot of people who, I know Kelly Bidlin, our own Kelly Bidlin, thinks this team is going under and not having a winning record. Pittsburgh's fascinating.
I think Kenny Pickett is Daniel Jones light, and Daniel Jones light is a light version of a franchise quarterback.
I don't think he's that.
I think he's better than Daniel Jones.
No, stop. He's not better than Daniel
Jones. Well, hold
Jones.
On. He's a better passer.
No question about it. That's what a quarterback is.
Yeah.
Bill Polian, single most important criteria for quarterback accuracy.
Well, Bill Polian, Lamar Jackson should be a safety.
Bill Polian's also got another important criteria for quarterback. All right, we'll take our break, come back, wrap it up. We'll pick our division winners and more before we get out of here on Sharp Money.